This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Jeff Regan, investigator. We'll hear The Guy from Gower Gulch from November 13, 1948. After that, it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen and Number 31, their story from September 7, 1947.
My name's Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, the Lion's Eye, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Guy from Gower Gulch.
It's a gray building, about the color of moldy bread. It's an apartment house in the middle of Hollywood, and it figures that the guy who built it quit voting when they named the street it sits on, Taft Avenue. My place is furnished with war surplus from the Spanish-American War. Well, it's got a hat rack, and that's where I live, number 308. In back, where you get a view and some fresh air from the alley. One's about as bad as the other. But I got it fixed up kind of nice. Hot plate, coffee pot, an autographed picture of Sally Rand that somebody left there. Only mistake I made was putting in a telephone. It spoils a lot of things.
Regan, it's the Lion. Wake up. We got a job.
Why don't you sleep at night?
Lucky for you, I got insomnia. We go broke.
Try Ovaltine. What kind of a job?
How should I know? Get your clothes on.
What are you doing, reading the want ads?
I got a note from a client.
You mean you got money?
$100 is all. Says he'll match it if we run him an errand.
Where to? Santa Ana Canyon?
He'll tell you.
You know, you got morals like a cash register. Can he write his name?
Davy Crockett. He's 50 years old.
Well, he's a little old for cowboys and Indians, isn't he?
That's his name, Davy Crockett.
Well, when's the wagon train pull out?
Regan, I don't know how I stand for you. Get over there.
Get where?
Listen, a guy works pretty hard. Building up a business like I have takes a lot out of him.
And you got plenty on tap.
I just want you to understand, that's all. Money doesn't grow on trees. Now, sometimes you gotta play your hunches.
Like George Gallup.
This time I got a feeling the guy's okay. He writes like a gentleman, Regan. I want you to treat him like one.
But where do I find him?
He's in a location can give us a lot of business.
Where?
The city jail.
Yeah, that's the Lion. Born under the sign of the dollar. Well, it happened on Monday night, and I found the Lincoln Heights jail looking real tired after a rough weekend. They were putting fresh creosote on the walls in front of the drunk tank, and the guy at the desk looked like he'd burst his radiator if anybody phoned for another reservation. It was about 1 a.m., but after a couple of jokes I know about alligators, Sergeant Gonzalez hauled out a drawer with some cards in it. Under C, he found it. Full name, David Crockett. Cell 273, solitary. Gonzalez walked me through a couple of corridors, and then he opened his cell and let me inside. Davy Crockett was there, awake and standing up. He was about 4 feet high, skinny, with a head like a sunburned turnip. He had blue veins roaming all over his nose and a handlebar mustache to hold him up. He looked at me like I was holding the fifth ace.
Howdy, stranger.
My name's Regan, International Detective Bureau.
How do I know? Start anything and I'll set up a racket.
Now, I work for the Lion. You called him.
Maybe yes, maybe no. You got credentials?
Where do you want them?
Easy, son. Not talking to an amateur. Flyweight champion, Buenos Aires, 29. Grab yourself a squat, partner.
What are you so nervous about?
Nothing. Be cautious, that's all.
All right, look, let's start at the beginning, shall we? What are you locked up for?
Fire plug. Got him in the dangest places in this burg.
What'd you do, steal it for your dog?
No. Parked my landlady's car alongside it while I ran an errand.
You don't get jugged for traffic tickets.
There were two cops. Looked like a posse. I don't like injustice.
All right, resisting arrest, is that all?
What more do you want? Told you I'm not a man to be trampled with. Taught judo in Tokyo, 34.
The Japs still lost the war.
Sit still, Regan. You're working.
On what?
Well, it's just another errand. It's not much.
Well, come on. Let's pick up the tempo, will you? My bicycle's double parked.
Say, you ever get saddle sores on a bicycle? I did once. 8-day race.
Yeah, I know. Now, what about this errand?
Little package wrapped up in a sweater. In the alley by the ash can.
Go on.
I calculate I dropped it about 3.5 feet to the left of the big ash can.
By accident?
Man can't fight with his hands full. I'll get down the address for you here.
All right. What's in that sweater you didn't want the cops to see?
A polecat.
It fits the rest of your story, yeah.
Son, there's nothing in the life of Davy Crockett won't stand inspection. When you get the package, check it in at the Union Station.
And then what?
Save me the stub. You get 100.
Save it for bail. You could do this job yourself.
Thought I told you, sonny. I like to be lonesome.
So you had him lock you up on purpose?
No, I just like it here. You want a reference? Check any of the boys in Gower Gulch.
Movie cowboy, huh?
Laddie, you're looking at the greatest jockey since Paul Revere. Eddie Sand to Eddie Arcaro. I beat them all. Kentucky Downs, 39.
Yeah, sure. Well, a job's a job, Davy, but I got a hot tip where I fit in.
Where's that?
Trailing the field. Well, I left the little man running his fingers through an old copy of Variety, and I went out into the street. It was about 3 o'clock, and a truck was throwing some water out and giving the gutter a shampoo. I picked up my car and started out to play retriever. That's when I spotted the blonde tailing me. She was using a 37 Packard, and the top was down. I could see her in the mirror. I could tell she had yellow hair like a rag doll. It took a few fast turns to get rid of her, but then I was solo when I pulled to a stop by the alley off Gower. It was in back of some old movie studios. About then, a drunk came pouring down the street, did a loop around a fire plug at the head of the alley, and sat down. He was the talented kind, and I figured he thought I was Arthur Godfrey. Well, I scrambled over some broken beer bottles looking for the sweater. It finally showed, lying beside a pack of newspaper and some dame's torn petticoat. That's when the drunk lost his tilt and began looking at me. I picked up an old shoe, I wrapped it in a newspaper, and I started out of the alley. The drunk went back to his audition, moving toward me.
Marie, the dawn is breaking. Marie, you'll soon be waking. Hiya, friend, have a drink.
That's not my brand.
Don't be a mug. A little drink between friends is real nice.
We haven't been introduced.
My name's Maxwell. What's yours?
Slipped my mind.
That's the trouble with the whole world. No fellowship. Except for my girl, Marie. You know Marie?
No, I don't.
Sort of short and plump with a little sinus trouble.
It's too bad.
Thought you might have met her. Lots of fellowship in that girl. Every time you look, another fella.
All right, move it, buddy.
Now, you don't want to get by me. Friends, you want to stand right there and have a little drink.
You got the subject we're going to talk about?
Yeah, sure. Here, what's in the package?
Dirty laundry.
Ain't that funny, though. I just got me a new Bendix.
Why don't you go into business?
That's what I'm going to do. You're my first customer.
No, I lux my dainties.
Yeah, don't go away, friend. I ain't through with my sales talk.
Well, hire a skywriter.
Hold up, I said.
Get your hands off of me.
All right, Regan, the round's over.
Yeah, what makes you the referee?
This does.
Friend here wants to play rough, Red.
Reconsider, Regan. It'll make you happy.
All right, what do you want?
The package.
You heard what he said, smart guy.
Why don't you work for it?
Heavy, Max! Don't leave, Regan. We're not finished.
I got the package, Red.
Give him a tip for picking it up.
Sure. Guess I overpaid him.
Well, it was easy to see. It was their play. I had about as much chance as a midget in a basketball game. The muscles ambled off with the package that they took from me, and I crawled back for that sweater. It was still there, wrapped around something hard and round. And when I ripped it off, a shine caught my eyes. It was a metal can of movie film, and the word Peru was marked on it. Not much for all the hush-hush, but it must have had a story. Well, I looked up a friend of mine who owned a camera shop, and I made a commotion with a $5 bill. That shook the sand out of him, and he rented me a projector with sound. The Lion's House was the next stop. We threw up a sheet on the wall and turned on the film. That completed the night. We had a trip to a good neighbor without a passport.
Wonders
turned out to be a Joan Fitzpatrick giving us some kind of a travelogue.
One of the most colorful in the world. A temple of worship. Home of Peru, 2,000 years old.
Movie.
Well, stop screaming, will you? It's free.
You know I can't stand movies. I got sore eyes.
All right, shut up and listen to this.
The marketplace. A street vendor dressed in gay native costume, selling delicacies to Peruvian children. beads and jewels of exquisite beauty wrought by the hands of master Peruvian artisans. Horse racing, an innovation from the modern world. And native dance.
I'm going to bed.
You won't sleep. I stole your eyeshade.
Oh, Regan, I gotta get up early. I got lots to do.
It'll keep.
A veritable symphony of motion. And so, it's with heavy heart we say adieu to lovely Peru, land of the Peruvians, land of charm and enchantment. And with the setting sun, we take our leave.
Well, what'd you get out of it?
A headache.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the morning.
No, I can't wait.
What you doing now?
I'm phoning the city jail.
Looking for a room?
Looking for information. Davey will supply it.
You've been drinking.
Now listen, Big Shot. Somebody's after this film for some reason. I'm going to find it.
City jail, Sergeant Gonzalez speaking.
Danny, it's Regan.
Oh, hiya, Regan. I'm glad you called. I just got that joke about the alligators.
Yeah, well, do me a favor, will you?
Sure, pal, sure. Say, I told it to the lieutenant. He's still laughing. You know, it may earn me a promotion, pal.
Let me talk to Davy Crockett.
Oh, I can't do that, Regan.
Well, you can say I'm his lawyer.
Well, it's not that, pal. He's not here anymore.
What do you mean?
Some guy bailed him out 20 minutes ago. When I was telling the lieutenant the joke, this guy in the briefcase comes in, slaps down the bail. Out walks your friend.
Well, he said he liked it there.
Yeah, Davy must have changed his mind.
Where'd he go?
Not very far. Just over to the morgue.
Well, the cowboy from Gower Gulch had spun his last yarn. Gonzalez told me that somebody had shot Crockett as soon as he hit the street. Oh, none of this made sense. The phony job, the blonde who tailed me, the fight in the alley, the corny movie. Well, the lion shoved the film in a desk, and I went out the door. I cut across his yard, but I stopped on the opposite sidewalk. My car wasn't alone. It was a 40-foot Nash sniffing at its rear fender.
Hey, Regan.
Well, Maxwell.
That's me.
You look different. Did you take the cure?
Shut up. Somebody wants to see you.
If it's Marie, tell her my book's full.
Thought you might like a lift.
No, I got a friend who runs a streetcar. Now, go on, beat it.
Regan, don't be that way.
Offer him a panatella, Maxwell.
Who's this, your father-in-law?
You smoke, Regan?
No, it might explode.
Yeah.
So long.
Hold it, busted. Get in.
Oh, Max. Max, I told you before, you're on probation.
That's all right. Don't pick on him, teacher. He didn't hurt me.
Get in front, Max.
Sure.
Where's your other boy, Red? We could play some bridge.
I thought he'd do better in the shoe business.
The one I gave him didn't fit, huh?
I'm a much misunderstood man, Mr. Regan. I'm sure you'll put your best foot forward.
I'd love to.
My card, Horace Grundy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime earlier, a little man called me, Mr. Regan. Custer or Boone or...
Davy Crockett?
Of course. I want you to understand I get many such calls.
Party line.
It's a private number, but the salesmen bother me anyway.
Well, it's tough to be popular. Davy tell you what he was selling?
No.
Well, he didn't tell me either.
Have it your own way. When I told him I'd meet him, he said he'd arranged to get out of jail. He said all he wanted was a job.
And he got one.
Yes, only there's no future to it. I wouldn't want anything like that happening to you, Mr. Regan.
I'll renew my insurance.
No, you'll come with me. It's more friendly.
Suppose I don't like to talk.
You won't have to, if everything goes all right.
Well, it's your taxi.
And you're paying the fare. All right, Maxwell. Clover Field.
I never knew a guy could say the name of an airport and make it sound like Forest Lawn. Grundy sat in the corner checking the manicure on his fingernails, and Maxwell drove out Olympic. By the time we skidded into Clover, I'd figured absolutely nothing. It was still only 4 a.m., but there was a string of cars parked in the lot. I spotted a 37 Packard Roadster, but I was too busy getting rushed up onto the field to look for the blonde. Besides, the faster we ran, the more excited Grundy got.
Hey, Mr. Grundy.
And then we rounded a hangar, and the reporters hit us.
Say, Louis B.'s pretty sore, huh?
No, no. Louis B. and I are friends. Just his plugs are burned. Let us through, boys.
Hey, wait a second. This Junior who's traveling on the plane, they say he wants $250,000. You going to pay him today?
After I see a workout. Come on, Regan. Let's go.
Yeah, you're a real big man, Grundy.
I'm going to be, Regan. El Romano, best rip of any horse in South America.
So that's it, huh? Where the ruins come from.
What's that?
Peru.
Oh, sure. Peruvian National Airways gave Julio a special plane. Everything special.
Like in the movies. Well, look, suppose you watch him unload. I'll take a back seat here.
Oh, no, no, Regan. This is a big day. I want you to see what... What's the ambulance for?
Well, don't look at me.
Stick around, Regan. It could be you.
Help me. Hey, got that stretcher over there.
Oh, he kicked me, hit me, kicked me.
It's Julio.
That the guy who owns him?
Must be.
I tried to hold him. They hold on right over my rib.
Take it easy, boy. We got you.
What happened?
Bounce. The landing, she is rough, that is all. Where is the doctor?
You're going to the hospital. Lie down.
Oh, I'm broken in 6 places.
Lift up the stretcher. Come on, boys. Hurry it up.
Oh, he kicked me. Move fast, boys. Yes, hot.
Hey, Mr. Grundy,
the horse! Well, the guy by the plane started to yell just about the time they took Julio toward the rear of the ambulance. Grundy took a dive for the cargo door, and so did everybody else. Then I had to stand there while 6 feet of Big Shot Cigar turned into a crybaby.
Look, Regan, look at the horse's leg. He's kicked himself.
Okay, so he's clumsy.
But he might not run again. He was going to be mine, Regan.
That's too bad. Call a vet.
I have already paid $50,000 retainer on the horse, Regan.
I'll send you a lawyer.
I got an idea you're connected with this.
Oh, dry up, Buster. It's an accident.
Yeah? I got an idea there's going to be another accident.
Yeah, Grundy, maybe you're right.
No! Oh,
hey, stop him!
Well, I didn't wait to see if he went down. Maxwell swung, but I took off through the crowd. I figured that Cloverfield wasn't for me, and I wasn't going to stick around for the daisy. And then I spotted a ride, the rear end of Julio's ambulance. I made it just as the buggy started to move. I pulled the door shut and tried not to step on that stretcher inside. I shouldn't even have bothered that. The stretcher was empty. The only patient was me.
You are listening to the story of the guy from Gower Gulch. Tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Commissions are still available in the Army Nurse Corps Reserve. Graduate registered nurses between the ages of 21 and 45 may qualify for service with this fine organization. If you are interested in joining the Army Nurse Corps and believe that you qualify for a commission, apply to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now back to Jeff Regan, investigator, and the story of the guy from Gower Gulch.
Well, things were beginning to move like a hula dancer with a hot foot. Davy Crockett sent me out to pick up a roll of movie film. A Joan Fitzpatrick travelogue on beautiful Peru. There was something in it that was hot, but Crockett got himself plugged before he could say what it was. There were shots of a horse race in Peru. And when a big buster named Grundy turns up buying a nag from a Peruvian breeder, I figured a connection. So did Grundy. When the horse got hurt and Julio did a disappearing act with his money, everybody looked at me. That's when I took the shortest way to Hollywood in an ambulance, got my car, and made it for home. Only parked up the street from my apartment was that same 37 Packard Roadster I'd been dodging all evening. The blonde wasn't in it. She was sitting in my place looking real hopeful.
Good evening. You keep late hours, Mr. Regan.
That's the kind of friends I've got.
Perhaps you ought to change them.
I'll stick it out. What do you want?
A little chance to talk to you.
It'll keep till morning.
Oh, but Mr. Regan, I've been waiting so long, you've got to talk to me now.
Why?
I'm Davy Crockett's wife. You've got something that belongs to me.
I don't see any wedding ring.
I don't wear one.
Scare off the other boys?
That's not a very nice remark, Mr. Regan.
No, but you'll let it go.
Only because it's not important.
Oh, stop it. You're not Davy's wife. If the little guy had anybody he could trust, he wouldn't have had to call in the lion.
All right, Mr. Regan. I lie.
Now, let's have it, lady. What are you after?
The roll of film.
That figures.
It's mine.
Convince me.
Mr. Regan, you're becoming very annoying.
Well, why don't you call the police?
But I tell you, it is mine.
Let's see the pink slip.
And so it is with heavy heart we bid adieu.
That's enough. Yeah. I thought I knew that voice.
Davy stole the roll from my library. Now may I have it back?
Homicide will turn it over to you when they're ready.
I can't wait.
Well, what makes it so valuable?
I'm not sure.
Then how do you know it is?
Because I'm not stupid, Mr. Regan. Somebody goes to a lot of trouble to break into my film library. But he only steals one roll of film.
Go on.
I put the police on, Davy. Follow them to the jail. So you go after the film. That adds up to pretty important business.
Did you push those holes in Davy?
Of course not.
Yeah, you're going to get a chance to prove that when homicide starts speaking in your cupboard.
About the film, I'll buy it from you.
No sale. There's the door, lady. Use it. I threw the light switch and grabbed for the floor. When the noise stopped, I looked up. My landlady was going to be mad. The shots plowed a few holes into her flower pot. The blonde turned a couple of different colors and decided she could find safer company. She left with a fire escape without even goodbye. Well, I headed for the lions. The idea being to make sure that he'd turn that film over to the police and advertise that I didn't have it anymore. That figured to cool me off and I could catch some sleep again. When I got there, the lion looked kind of excited. He was wrapped up in a silk robe with red and gray stripes, and he carried a drink to match. He was holding a piece of that movie film up to the light.
Hey, Regan, I've been calling all over for you. Where you been?
I've been looking for a bed.
I don't pay you to sleep. You're on a job. Now, I've been thinking since you left. We're handling this wrong.
Yeah, now that's what I figure. Get on the phone.
What for?
To tell Homicide you got a package for him. You're turning over that film right now.
Easy, Regan.
You heard me, Big Shot. I'm tired of playing the fall guy.
Now, Regan, you don't know what you're saying. I've been running over the section on that Peruvian horse race. And you know what?
You picked the winner.
And we're going to collect.
Who's making book?
The insurance company.
Well, come on, clear it up.
Look at this clip.
Yeah.
Well, what do you see? What do you see?
Looks like a horse.
But look at him. He's way out in front. El Romano.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, here's the way I add it up. This film tells a story, or everybody wouldn't be grubbing around for it.
Well, now that takes a big brain.
So somebody's engineering a phony.
Who?
That's what you're going to find out. But I'll tell you one thing. That nag's insured by Banner Trust, and they pay off big if we can turn up the swindle.
All right. Give me that picture.
Where you going?
Over to Grundy's to check the horse.
Now you're talking, Regan. You dig that out, and we'll be eating squab.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you'll be collecting your unemployment insurance.
Well, the payoff's about the same. I didn't like it any better than a fan dancer likes a wind tunnel. I'd already seen enough of Grundy and his boys for one night, but when the lion gets an idea, he's like a hangman with a new rope. So I went out to test it. I found Horace Grundy's place. It was a bright new house in the San Fernando Valley. There was some fancy fence in back, and a stable looked like the paint was still wet where it said El Romano. A trailer was parked on the road with a truck from the veterinarians. When Grundy opened the front door, he looked like he'd been sitting a three-day wake, but without any beer.
Hello, Regan.
Well, what's the verdict?
It's bad, Regan. Bad. Tendons torn. Never run. Never.
Yeah, you said that.
I can't believe it.
Uh-huh. I knew somebody else liked animals. A guy from Gower Gulch.
Decided to talk?
Maybe. If you keep your hands in the audience.
What else did Crockett say?
Now you got him on the wheel.
All right, you drive.
That's better. You know the horse is insured?
Not by me, it isn't.
You don't own it. You just paid a deposit.
Sure, 50 G's.
You got it back yet?
There's plenty of time. Julio's in the hospital.
Oh? Well, now, if it wasn't for the accident, you would have coughed up another 200,000.
Yes. No. What difference does it make? The whole deal's a bust now.
What if that horse is a phony?
Say some more, Regan.
I don't know much more. Davy Crockett was a movie fan.
You're doing fine. You had pictures?
I wouldn't advertise them, but there's a shot of a horse winning a race. Take a look here.
Give me that.
All right, it's economy size. You're going to ruin your eyesight.
I got a magnifying glass for my income tax.
Well, let's get a light behind it. Now, let me see.
Horse?
You get a star.
Four white feet.
I can do that well myself.
Listen, Regan. Horse in the stable's got three.
That does it. My boss gets promoted.
Come on. Come on outside. I'll show you.
No, I'll take your word for it. Let go of me. I got my information.
Max. Maxwell, where are you?
I told you, don't whistle the bulldogs.
You're in it now, Regan. You're on my side.
All right, drop your blood pressure. There's a handkerchief on the play.
Hey, wait. Wait. Hello. I look for somebody. Good morning.
Pan America.
See, see. I'm Julio. Is Mr. Grundy?
It's the guy with his mouth open there.
How do you do? I'm so glad to meet and
talk. Choke it.
Okay?
You switched horses.
No, no, you're not understand. El Romano, he kicked me.
Wait for the encore.
Mr. Grundy, with belief, I'm telling you.
Now look, you better make it fast, Julio. This guy goes
Shut
off.
Shut up, Regan. A man trades a stretcher for a slab. Let him talk.
The hospital. I did not go. Julio is honest. A debt comes first.
The interest's going up.
When El Romano hurts himself, I know the deal is off. I know I must see the consul, so we cash the check.
What?
Here we are. 10,000, 20, 30, 40, 50. Your down payment is up. Now we are one big happy United Nations, no?
Well, that's what happened. Now there were two guys with their mouths open. By the time we got them closed, the little gent from Peru had waddled off someplace, and Grundy folded his money and started to laugh. He was happy, and at least I had what I came for. Figured I could dump the whole plate of spaghetti on the lion. The lead horse in the travelogue was a different nag from the one in the stable. So I got in my car and headed for home. but I picked up a newspaper on the corner, and then the whole bucket turned upside down again. The green sheet was loaded with publicity shots of El Romano from South America, and he was exactly the same oat burner that came in on the plane, feet and all. No switch there. Well, if there was something phony in this act, it was that winner in that Fitzpatrick film. Well, for a minute, I felt like a test pilot in a yo-yo factory, and then the string broke. I took a fast run to the Lions and one more look at those movies. I had it. The case was beginning to wind. 10 minutes later, I was back on Gower Gulch.
Yes? Who is it?
Regan. You alone?
Don't be insulting.
I'll open the door. What's the matter? You're slow.
What do you want?
Ask me in.
No. No,
ask me in.
Regan, look out!
Be careful, Regan. I have your gun.
Well, Julio.
Yes, Julio.
What are you doing here?
Well, I told you.
I know. Back at my place, you're aiming at her, not me. She's been to Peru. She has the films. You knew that.
You wish like I know it.
I go to the movies like everybody else. I keep my eyes on the winner. After Hollywood Park, I should have known better.
Yeah, there are lots of races.
El Romano was a dud. He came in last. 60 lengths with Davy Crockett digging in the spurs. You gave the nag a build-up, phony publicity to the sucker and insurance company.
A quarter of a million, I was over.
Can it? You could have never closed a sale without Grundy watching a workout. That would have been a slow boat to China.
You want to be a sailor, too?
Oh, stop being tough, will you? You wore yourself out when you kicked up El Romano in that plane.
It looked good.
Yeah. Not to me or Joan.
Look out, Regan. You're asking for a daily double.
Well, I'm going to take it across the board. Give me that gun.
Leave me alone.
Drop it.
No, you're breaking my arm.
That's the idea.
I'll kick you in the stomach.
No. Oh. You better go back to his stretcher.
Well.
Yeah.
My, you can be useful.
Well, when I'm working.
What about after hours? I'm not bad, you know.
I never noticed.
Look again.
No, I'm all through with the ponies.
Wanna bet?
Davy Crockett told me to play my hunches.
Here I am.
Yeah, but you're a loser.
What do you mean?
You threw those holes into Davy.
It was Julio.
Oh, you're trying real hard, but he was on the plane.
What do I do now?
Well, you might bid a fond adieu to Gower Gulch.
That's not funny, Regan.
I know it. But you ran out of film. Well, the whole thing blew up like a hoop skirt in a high wind. Julio had a real good thing until he ran into the little man with a good memory and a dame with a fast trigger finger. Her blackmail pitch was already set up, but Davy figured to queer it, so she had to knock him off. Well, the hospital boys came after Julio, and homicide dated Joan, the travel queen. The Lion was pretty excited about the way things worked out. He figured that the insurance company would come across with some green stuff for exposing a fraud. They did. That was the color of the season pass they gave him to the Burton Holmes travel lectures.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS at this same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, Investigator. Written by Larry Roman and Jackson Gillis, produced by Sterling Tracy. Included in tonight's cast were Leo Clary, Clayton Post, Yvonne Patey, Ed Begley, and Herb Ellis. $29,000 nurses are needed to join the new Army Nurse Corps Officers Reserve. For the first time in history, qualified nurses have the opportunity of receiving commissions in the regular Army Reserve. These nurses will remain on inactive status, ready to serve their country in time of emergency. 4,000 of them, if they wish, may choose active duty. All nurses who receive commissions will benefit from the opportunity for specialized training offered to them by the Army. Inactive reserve status will not interfere with the nurse's civilian life, but the educational opportunities offered her by the Army Medical Department will be of a great advantage in her work. Don't wait. If you're a registered graduate nurse between the ages of 21 and 45, drop a card for complete information to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles, Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Thank you.
suffering from painful corns, listen. One cool drop of Freezone liquid corn remover instantly cools, soothes burning painful corns. Instantly goes to work to relieve tormenting pain. Equally amazing, when used as directed, Freezone helps remove corns. Get Freezone liquid corn remover. There's no fuss, no bulky, messy pads. One cool drop of Freezone instantly cools, soothes burning painful corns. Ellery Queen. In the interests of a safer American home, a happier American community, a more United States, the makers of Anacin bring you Ellery Queen.
I dedicate this program to the fight against crime. Not merely crimes of violence and crimes of dishonesty, but crimes of intolerance, discrimination, and bad citizenship. Crimes against America.
Anacin, for the fast, prolonged relief of headache pain, brings you another case in the career of Ellery Queen, celebrated fighter of crime. Anacin's guest armchair detective, who's in the studio to solve the mystery, before Ellery reveals the solution, is Mr. Kent Smith. And now, Ellery Queen tells the story of a mysterious international figure suspected of diamond smuggling, number 31.
Just a minute, Charlie. Inspector.
Huh? Who is it, Billy?
A radio phone. Charlie says some guy's calling the police department from the steamship Aegea at sea.
Mm-hmm. So I'm elected, huh? Inspector Queen speaking.
You kept me waiting.
I kept... Who is this?
George Arcaris.
Oh, yes, Mr. Arcaris. Well, what can I do for you?
You and your police and your customs officials can let me alone. That's what you can do for me, Inspector, whoever you are.
No, I don't get you, Mr. Arcaris. If you're on shipboard in mid-Atlantic, you...
You can let me alone when the ship docks in New York.
Oh, expecting trouble with the customs, Mr. Arcaris?
Very humorous. 3 times now I've been searched in your customs like a common criminal. If it occurs this time, I shall make the most vigorous representations to my government. Do you understand me? Inspector, what is your name?
I understand you.
He's going to make trouble, Inspector, huh?
That's what he says, Vili. Hmm.
Is this a private fight, Dad, or can anyone get in on it?
Oh, that was a bird named George Arcaris, Ellery.
He's from the Near East.
Yeah, and he has plenty of connections.
Arcaris, of course.
What's your interest in him?
Well, son, about a year ago, we got a tip he was smuggling diamonds in. We passed the tip to customs. They gave him the business.
But no diamonds, I take it.
No diamonds. Still, after Arcaris sailed back to his homeland... Some stuff turned up around New York that seemed to jibe with our tip.
The same thing happened on his next 2 trips, Maestro.
Now he calls from mid-ocean to say that if he's bothered again, he'll make a diplomatic issue of it.
Well, if he's innocent, you can't blame him.
Listen, Miss Porter, this Arcaris is an international mystery man.
And he's suspected of everything from espionage to murder, but never any proof.
Well, it certainly doesn't keep him out of cafe society. He's always being wined and dined by people like Pip Istrom and Sue Mounting and that crowd.
Oh. Who's been passing these tips along, Dad?
Oh, they've been coming in by way of the underground. Vita, get me ZK at customs.
Yes, sir, right away.
Of course, it's occurred to you, Dad, that Arcaris may be smuggling the diamonds in through a Confederate.
Sure, it's occurred to us, but
that's right, yeah.
What can you do? It's one of those things that...
Yeah, just a minute, please.
Here's simple enough.
Here's ZK, Inspector.
Zach, anything come in on George Arcaris? Yes, I know. Well, I just got a notion about that. I'll call you right back. There's been another tip. Now, listen, Ellery. We must make sure that Arcaris isn't slipping the ice to a co-worker to carry off. Now, would you make sure for us?
It's a delicate situation, Maestro.
If you tell us he hasn't passed anything to a pal, we'll search Arcaris in customs, Ellery.
I'd have to board the Aegea quite a bit before she docks, Dad.
That'll be a cinch now. I can arrange it with the port and customs people.
All right.
Now, look here. You go out Sunday with the pilot and mingle with the passengers.
Yeah, neither do I. Wait a minute. There he is.
Now, Vili, be ready to take Arcaris over from Ellery.
Okay.
All right, get going.
So that's Mr. Arcaris.
Let's get closer, Nikki.
Why, Inspector, there's Pip Istrom and Susu Mounting, his fiancé.
His society friends, huh?
Pip, Susu, here I am.
Susu, there he is.
George, hi, George. Darling, hi.
A
I'll see you as soon as I'm finished with the customs.
Don't let him push you around, George.
Oh, don't worry.
Well, Larry, nothing doing.
He didn't pass it.
I'm positive. Haven't had my eyes off him. If he's smuggling anything, Dad, it's in his luggage or on him.
Well, that means a body search. And I better go tell Zach. Thanks, son.
Phone me at home, Dad, will you?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if they'll find anything, Ellery.
I wonder. Nothing, eh?
Not a blasted thing, son. Billy swears Arcaris didn't pass anything to anyone from the gangway to the customs ship.
Arcaris raising Cain?
He's calling Washington right now. I guess those tips are phonies, and we fell for them.
Yeah. Keep me informed, Dad. Oh, Nikki.
The inspector?
Yes, and it's a washout.
Oh, by the way, Ellery, there's a Mrs. Prine waiting to see you. She's terribly concerned about her son.
Her son?
Well, all right?
Oh, as long as she's here already, yeah.
Come in, Mrs. Prine.
Yes, please, come in, Mrs. Prine, and sit down, won't you?
Oh, Mr. Quinn, it's about Arthur, my boy.
Yes?
He's missing. He didn't come home yesterday.
Well, suppose you tell me all about it.
Well, we live in Harlem, Mr. Quinn, just Arthur and me. I'm a widow. I'm sickly, and Arthur supports me.
Where was Arthur supposed to be coming home from, Mrs. Prine?
From his job. He's got a butlin' job over on Park Avenue, employed by Mr. Istrin.
Ellery.
Oh, the buddy of our good friend, Nikki. Please go on, Mrs. Prime.
Well, every Saturday for 3 years, Mr. Queen, that boy's come straight home from Park Avenue with his salary. Here it is Sunday, and he ain't home yet.
Have you called Mr. Istrin?
Oh, yes, sir, yesterday evening. But he said Arthur had left at the usual time, saying he was going right home. I don't know what I'll do if Arthur don't show up by tonight.
Mrs. Prime is afraid he'll lose his job, Ellery.
Mr. Istrom's awful strict. Every morning, Arthur has to have Mr. Istrom's breakfast ready by 9 o'clock. Monday mornings, Arthur always gets there by 8:30, just so Mr. Istrom can eat on time.
Did Istrom offer any possible explanation, Mrs. Bryant?
Well, he said not to worry. But I don't know, Mr. Queen. It don't sound like Arthur.
Have you notified the police?
Oh, no, sir. Mr. Istrom wouldn't like that. That's why I come to you, Mr. Queen.
Yes. Well, now, you go home and stop worrying, Mrs. Prine. I'll make the inquiries.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Queen.
That's all right.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Pip Istrom's butler, and today George Arcaris came in. Funny coincidence.
Nikki, get me the Missing Persons Bureau.
Here she is, Ellery.
Oh. Good morning, Mrs. Prine.
Morning, Mr. Queen. Miss Porter.
Morning.
I got down here just as fast as I could.
Mrs. Prine, I think we've found Arthur.
You have? Where is he?
Mrs. Prine.
Wait. Yes, sir?
I'm afraid we have some dreadful news for you. This is the city mortuary.
What, sir?
This is the morgue, Mrs. Prine. Nikki.
All right, sir. All right.
Lean on me, Mrs. Prine.
Do you think that you're up to identifying Arthur officially for us, Mrs. Prine?
I want to see my boy.
Nikki.
I know, Ellery.
All right, Mrs. Prine. Sergeant.
Right, Maestro.
That's my son. Arthur. He was all damp. Wet-like.
His body was taken out of the East River at 5 o'clock this morning.
Arthur never did a wrong thing in his life. Only maybe play 10 cents on the numbers once in a while. He won $20 last month playing the number 31.
What?
Yes, sir. He liked that number, 31. Been playing it for most a year. Do I go home now?
Sergeant, take Mrs. Bryan home, will you?
Yeah. Go on, Miss Bryan.
Easy.
I think I'd like a cup of coffee, Ellery.
Then Pip Istrom is going to have to give it to you.
Istrom? But, Ellery, it's so early in the morning. It's only 7:15.
This can't wait, Nikki. There's a connection between Arthur's death and George Arcaris. That number, 31.
You mean just because Arthur played 31 all the time in the numbers
game? The number of Arcaris's cabin on the Aegea was also 31. Come on, Nikki.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. If you want to relieve headache, neuritis, or neuralgia pains quickly, try Anacin. The relief it brings is incredibly fast. Here's why. Anacin is made like a doctor's prescription, contains not just one, but a combination of medically active and proved ingredients. Get Anacin from your druggist, an easy-to-take tablet form. Keep it handy. And then next time you have a headache pain or suffer pain of neuritis or neuralgia, take Anacin tablets. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. And now, back to our story. Hopping into a cab, Ellery and Nikki go directly from the city mortuary to Pip Istrom's apartment on Park Avenue.
I can't see anyone at this hour. I'm just having my breakfast.
Mr. Istrom, your butler is dead.
Arthur? Dead? Well, come in.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Please forgive the appearance of my apartment. Arthur was the only servant I employed. Then, that's something of a blow. He was a jewel. Won't you sit down?
Thanks, Mr. Istrom, but we...
Mind if I have another cup of coffee?
Not at all.
Join me?
No, thanks.
Arthur's mother phoned me Saturday night, but naturally... How did he die? Run over? Stabbed in some Harlem brawl?
Even if he was in a brawl, Mr. Istrom, I strongly doubt that it took place in Harlem. He died of a cerebral fracture. There's a bruise on his jaw, and the back of his head is not pretty.
And then his body was dumped in the East River, like a sack of garbage.
In a word, Mr. Istrom, Arthur was murdered.
That's clumsy of me. Well, see here, Queen, do the police think I did it or some such nonsense? The last time I saw Arthur was Saturday evening when he left here perfectly all right.
Mm-hmm. I take it that your friend, George Arcaris, knew Arthur.
Sure. What has Arcaris to do with Arthur's death, Queen?
That, Mr. Istrom, is what I propose to find out.
George, he only got into the States yesterday morning.
Arthur may not have been murdered until yesterday afternoon. Immersion in water, you see, often makes it difficult to fix the exact time of death.
Now, look here. I'm getting a little bit bored with all this. My fiancée, Miss Mounting, and I have known Mr. Arcaris for a long time, and I'm quite
31.
Sure... I beg your pardon?
I said 31. Does the number 31 mean anything to you, Mr. Istrom?
Not a thing.
Oh. Then, I'll let you return to your breakfast. Nikki?
Now you're way off, son. What possible connection could there be?
I don't know, Dad, but there is one.
All on account of a number 31. A coincidence.
Just the same, I'm going to see Arcaris.
Ellery, no.
Why?
Now lay off Arcaris, will you? You don't know the stench he's made. Now, please, son.
Okay. But, Dad, I think you're making a big mistake.
And that seemed to be the end of the diamond smuggling case. And of the Arthur Prime case, too. The police got nowhere on it, and Ellery got grumpier every day. Then 2 weeks later, it was a Sunday.
Nikki, is that you?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
In my Sunday best. Ellery, what's the matter?
The Aegea. It's sailing today.
So what?
George Arcaris is sailing on it.
I suppose he is.
Nikki. We can just make it.
Make what?
The Aegea. I just solved it, Nikki. Come on.
I hope you know what you're doing, Mr. Queen.
Trust me, Captain.
You hope.
Queen. Captain Dillier, Mr. Arcaris. Open your cabin door, please.
Yes?
What is it, Captain? Who are these people?
Mr. Arcaris, would you mind if this gentleman searches your cabin?
Search? I mind very definitely, Captain.
Perhaps if I explained. Mr. Arcaris, it's my theory that this cabin contains a hiding place.
Hiding place? Of what?
Of some diamonds.
Oh, I see. Formerly, I've been accused of smuggling diamonds into the United States. Now I am accused of smuggling them out. Is that it?
Not exactly. But you will admit, Mr. Arcaris, won't you, that it's a very odd coincidence you're always booking Cabin 31 on the Aegea, both coming and going?
Man is demented. Very well. Go ahead.
Sir, I can't hold up the ship, Mr. Queen. We sail in 10 minutes.
Ellery, 10 minutes?
One side, Nicky.
You'll have to hurry, Mr. Queen.
It's a pity my good friends, Mr. Eastram and Miss Mounting, did not stay on board long enough to witness this spectacle.
So Eastram and Miss Mounting were here, Mr. Arcaris. Here in your cabin?
You know them? Yes, Mr. Queen. They always see me off.
That's very interesting, Arcaris, because the steel support of this bunk comes out, revealing a very effective hiding place.
What?
Why, it's big enough to hide a fortune in diamonds.
But Mr. Queen, it's empty.
Certainly, Captain, but it was full of diamonds when the Aegea docked.
But Ellery, he was searched when he got off the ship.
Arcaris left the diamonds on board, Nicky. He never carried them off when the ship made port, but he made sure always to get Cabin 31 for the return trip. You heard him just now. Pip Istrom and Susu Mounting always see him off. Visitors to the ship on its outgoing voyage. Such visitors are not searched when they leave. One of them carried the diamonds off just a few minutes ago.
Stand very still.
Oh. My error.
Do not move, please. Not even a little. Very good.
Oh, the swine. Locked.
Ellery, look here, through the porthole. He's running down the gangway just as they're pulling it in.
Never mind our carriage, Nicky. We've got to get to Wistrom's. Captain, get us off your ship. And so, Mr. Istrom, I will trouble you for those diamonds.
The Queen, they have nothing to do with our carriage. My fiancée, Miss Mounting, did turn some jewels over to me this afternoon, yes.
But... Oh, she did?
Yes, she often does. Susu was very popular before our engagement, you know, with some extremely wealthy gentry. She gambles a little, I'm afraid, and she turned some of their gifts over to me for disposal. You know, my father made his money in South African diamonds. I still have some of father's connection. Do you doubt my word?
Are you as big an idiot as you sound, Istrom? Your precious Susu has been smuggling diamonds into the United States for your friend Arcaris and getting you to turn them into cash.
That's a lie, Queen. That's a filthy lie. Oh,
Ellery, watch yourself.
Semper, Mr. Istrom. Sorry.
Wow. You knocked him out, Ellery. He's out cold.
Yes. Now to find those diamonds.
Don't bother.
Huh?
Susu Mounting.
I've got them. It's the Queen, isn't it?
You know, Miss Mounting, that gun is probably loaded. You sure you know what you're doing?
Oh, stop it. Now, you're both going to march out of here and go down to the street. You'll pretend nothing's wrong. You'll get into my car. Drive it. I'll be in the back with this thing pointing at you. And you'll drive out to the country.
Sounds cozy.
Shut up.
Where are we going, Susu?
To a little hideaway cottage used by George Arcaris.
Arcaris?
Get going.
You are an idiot, Susu, to bring them here. Why did you not shoot them in bits apart?
Well, I'm not as used to shooting people as you are, George. I'm getting out of here.
Stay where you are.
Perhaps it is just as well, Mr. Queen. I owe you something. Personally. Now that Susu has brought you here, we will make the best of it, eh? We have the diamonds. This is Pip Istrom's pistol. We will concoct a plot.
Ellery.
It's all right, Nicky. Arcaris wouldn't be that foolish.
Foolish?
This cottage is owned by Pip Easter, Mr. Quinn. An accommodation to his good friend, George. But nothing on paper, you understand. So we will bury you here. By the time you are found, Mr. Eastram, who has been a dupe throughout, we'll have some explaining to do.
No, don't. George, wait. Wait till I go away with you.
My dear Miss Mounting, we smuggle diamonds together. We will commit murder together.
Oh, no.
Or would you rather join them? I give you 5 seconds, Susu.
Get it over with. Quick.
Duck, Nicky. I've got his gun, Dad.
Nice shooting, Billy.
Yeah, stand still, girlfriend.
Take your paws off me, you. It's Mr. Eastram. Pip.
You filth.
Has anybody got a drink?
You've done your last drinking for some time, Miss Mounting. And I don't think, Arcaris, that you'll smuggle any more diamonds like these into the United States for some time. You will get me a physician and my consulate at once.
Sure.
Well, son, another narrow squeak.
You got Mr. Eastram to thank, Maestro. He came to after the Mounting woman hustled you out and phoned us pronto.
I heard Susu's confession, Mr. Queen. It quite restored my sanity.
Thanks for saving our lives, Eastram. Well, Dad, now...
Hillary. Let's get out of here.
Nicky, don't you want to know who killed Mrs. Prine's son, Arthur?
The murder of Mr. Istrom's butler.
You mean, son, the two cases are connected?
Oh, yes, Dad. And I'll tell you how right now. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, Nicky, will you introduce our guest?
Sure thing, Ellery. He's the popular screen and stage star, most recently seen with Anne Sheridan in the film Nora Prentice. Mr. Kent Smith.
Good evening, Mr. Smith. Nice to have you here.
Good evening, Ellery. Thanks for inviting me.
I understand that this season you're going to be playing for the fourth time with Catherine Cornell in Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra. Is that right?
That's right, Ellery. I played with Miss Cornell in Candida, St. Joan, Wingless Victory, and I'm looking forward with great enjoyment to Antony and Cleopatra.
Well, lots of luck, Mr. Smith. Let's hope the play has a long run. But now let's get down to business, shall we? Tell me who killed Arthur Prine.
Well, it seems rather simple from where I sit. I don't know whether it is or not, but I guess that Susa's the real villain in this piece, except that she...
The villainess.
The villainess, yeah.
Just to be grammatically correct.
Well, I must say that I was fooled about... Pip, but as long as he turns out to be okay, he probably...
Having saved our lives, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It came in handy then.
And you gathered it with you.
Certainly did.
Yeah.
And the motive? Briefly?
Well, that I can't quite establish, except she might have found him. Pip sent his butler to cabin 31. And the code they used was the numbers
code. And you connected with the diamonds.
Yeah.
I see. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Smith, and you'll find out in just a moment what the solution is.
I can't wait.
Good. Now, here is Don Hancock.
If you want to be certain your breath is sweeter and your teeth are brighter after brushing, listen. Collinose toothpaste has a mouthwash effect built right in to sweeten the breath. The moment you use Collinose, its mouthwash effect instantly and unfailingly sweetens every case of unpleasant breath due to improper cleansing. Sweetens every case. At the same time, Collinose polishing action brightens teeth beautifully by removing ordinary yellow surface stains. So to be certain your breath is sweeter and your teeth are brighter, get K-O-L-Y-N-O-S, Collinose toothpaste or tooth powder tonight.
Listen, every morning for 3 years, Arthur Prine prepared his employer's breakfast by 9 o'clock. On Monday mornings, Arthur always got to Mr. Istrom's apartment by 8:30, Mrs. Prine told us, Nicky. Just so Mr. Istrom can eat on time. Now, Nicky, do you recall the morning Mrs. Prine identified Arthur's body at the morgue?
Yes, it was a Monday morning.
And what time was it when we left the morgue to go to Mr. Istrom's apartment?
Very early. I think I said it was 7:15.
That's right. We took a cab. We went directly from the morgue to Istrom's Park Avenue apartment. So when we saw Istrom, no more than 15 to 20 minutes could have elapsed. In other words, it was around 7:30 in the morning. And what was Istrom doing when we called on him at that hour?
Eating his breakfast.
At 7:30 a.m. But this was breaking a fixed habit of years. Why, on that particular Monday morning, did not Pip Istrom wait for his man Arthur to turn up to prepare breakfast for him?
Because he knew Arthur was dead, Ellery?
Well, Dad, the only ones who knew Arthur was dead at that time were ourselves and Arthur's mother. Arthur's body hadn't been fished out of the East River until 5 a.m., hadn't been identified by his mother until 7:15 a.m., 15 minutes before we found Istrom eating a breakfast he himself must have prepared, since Arthur was his only servant. There is only one way Istrom could have known Arthur was dead, and that's if Istrom had killed him. Correct, Istrom?
Correct.
Yeah, but, Maestro, why? And what did the number 31 have to do with it?
Well, for some time, Arthur, who had a weakness for playing the numbers game, had been playing 31, because he had noticed that your good friend Arcaris always occupied cabin 31 in the Aegea. Arthur took that as a hunch, as so many numbers players do. But that last Saturday, Arthur suddenly realized that Arcaris wasn't using cabin 31 in the Aegea just because he liked it. He had probably noticed also that each time after Arcaris sailed in cabin 31 in the Aegea, your fiancé, Istrom, invariably deposited some diamonds with you. And your butler made the connection you were too blind to make. He told you that Saturday afternoon, and you must have...
I was so outraged, I lost my temper and hit Arthur in the jaw with all my strength. He fell hard and fractured his head on the floor. I didn't mean to kill him. I hit his body then, middle of the night. I took it down the surface elevator into my car, disposed of it in the river.
I'm afraid, Istrom, that you've been your own worst enemy throughout. Too infatuated with Susu Mounting to see what she really was, too hot-headed to control that murderous temper of yours, and too foolish to call the police when Arthur died and rely on the simple truth. Now you'll have to face a jury under very different circumstances.
It'll be your own fault, Istrom, if they don't believe your story. Sergeant, take him in, too.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. Thank you again, Mr. Kent Smith, for being our guest armchair detective this evening. And as mementos of your visit with us, Anderson is proud to present you with this autographed copy of my new anthology, The Queen's Awards, 1946, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. As a special gift, we have for you a Stromberg-Carlson radio phonograph combination, complete with push-button tuning and automatic record changer. We're also presenting you with a generous supply of Anison for the relief of headache pain. Perhaps your own doctor has already recommended Anison for the fast help it can give.
Ellery will be back in a moment. The next time you suffer from pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, take Anison. The relief it brings is incredibly fast, and here's why. Anison is made like a doctor's prescription, contains not just one, but a combination of medically active and proved ingredients. Get Anison from your druggist in easy-to-take tablet form. Keep it handy. And then, next time you have a headache pain or suffer pain of neuritis or neuralgia, take Anison tablets. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Anison, A-N-A-C-I-N. Now, Ellery, what about next week?
Next week's story, Don, is about a tense problem in human relations and crime. I call it Tragedy in Blue. This is Ellery Queen saying goodnight for Anison and enlisting all Americans in the fight against bad citizenship, bigotry, and discrimination, the crimes which are weakening America.
All names of characters used in this program are fictitious and do not refer to real people, either living or dead. Among the members of tonight's cast were Larry Dobkin, Charlotte Keene, Bill Smith, and Ed Latimer. Music by Chet Kingsbury, Don Hancock speaking. Beginning September 28th, the makers of Anison and Kalinos will bring you at the same time a new and exciting program direct from Hollywood called Hollywood Star Preview. Remember the date, September 28th. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's going to do it for the show this week. I hope you enjoyed our stories this time. You can find more from Jeff Regan, Ellery Queen, lots more old-time radio at relicradio.com. All our shows are there, past episodes from this one, and our Shoutcast stream with even more old-time radio. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, you can donate through the website as well. Your support is what makes all of this possible. Can't do it without you. Thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.